It was a little cruel, in Loken's opinion. Someone, somewhere, and Loken suspected the scheming of Malagurst, had omitted to tell the officers of the 140th Expedition Fleet exactly who they were about to welcome on board. The vengeful spirit and its attendant fleet consorts had drawn up majestically into anchorage alongside the vessels of the 140th, and an armoured heavy shuttle had transferred from the flagship to the battle barge Misericord. Nathaniel August and his coterie of commanders, including Eidolon's equerry Eschcrus, had assembled on one of the Misericord's main embarkation decks to greet the shuttle. They knew it was bearing the commanders of the relief task force from the 63rd Expedition, and that inevitably meant officers of the 16th Legion. With the possible exception of Eschcrus, they were all nervous. The arrival of the Lunar Wolves, the most famed and feared of all Astartes divisions, was enough to tension any man's nerve strings. When the shuttle's landing ramp extended, and 10 Lunar Wolves descended through the clearing vapour, there had been silence, and that silence had turned to stifled gasps when it became apparent these were not the 10 brothers of a captain's ceremonial detail, but 10 captains themselves in full, formal war gear. The first captain led the party, and made the sign of the Aquila to Methaniel August. "I am," he began. "I know who you are, Lord," August said, and bowed deeply, trembling. There were few in the Imperium who didn't recognise or fear First Captain Abaddon. "I welcome you and—" "Hush, Master," Abaddon said. "We're not there yet." August looked up, not really understanding. Abaddon stepped back into his place, and the 10 captains formed an honour guard and snapped to attention, visors front and hands on the pommels of their sheathed swords. The War Master emerged from the shuttle. Everyone, apart from the 10 captains and Methaniel August, immediately prostrated themselves on the deck. The War Master stepped slowly down the ramp. His very presence was enough to inspire total and unreserved attention, but he was, quite calculatedly, doing the one thing that made matters even worse. He wasn't smiling. August stood before him, his eyes wide open, his mouth opening and closing wordlessly. Eschcrus, who had himself gone quite green, glanced up and yanked at the hem of August's robes. "Abase yourself," he hissed. August couldn't. Loken doubted the veteran fleetmaster could have even recalled his own name at that moment. Horus came to a halt, towering over him.
"Sir, will you not bow?" Horus inquired.
When August finally replied, his voice was a tiny, embryonic thing.
"I can't remember how."
Then, once again, the War Master showed his limitless genius for leadership. He sank to one knee and bowed to Methaniel August.
"I have come as fast as I was able to help you, sir," he said.
He clasped August in an embrace. The War Master was smiling now.
"I like a man who's proud enough not to bend his knees to me," he said.
"I would have bent them if I had been able, my lord," August said.
Already August was calmer, gratefully put at ease by the War Master's informality.
"Forgive me, Methaniel, and may I call you Methaniel? Forgive me for not informing you that I was coming in person. I detest pomp and ceremony, and if you'd known I was coming, you'd have gone to unnecessary lengths."
Horus rose to his feet and looked around at the prone figures covering the wide deck.
"Rise, please. A cheer or a round of applause will do me."
The fleet officers rose, cheering and applauding. He'd won them over, just like that, thought Loken. They were his now, forever. Horus moved forwards to greet the officers and commanders individually. Loken noticed Eschcrus in his purple and gold robes and half-armour, taking his greeting with a bow. There was something sour about the equerry, Loken thought. "Helms," Abaddon ordered, and the company commanders removed their helmets. They moved forwards, more casually now, to escort their commander through the press of applauding figures. Horus whispered an aside to Abaddon as he took greeting kisses and bows from the assembly. Abaddon nodded. He touched his link and spoke to the other three members of the Mournival. "War Council in 30 minutes. Be ready to play your parts." The other three knew exactly what that meant. They assembled for council in the Strategium of the Misericord, a massive rotunda situated behind the barge's main bridge. The War Master took the seat at the head of the long table, and the Mournival sat down with him, along with August, Eschcrus, and 9 senior ship commanders and army officers. The other Lunar Wolf captain sat amongst the crowds of lesser fleet officers, filling the tiered seating in the galleries above them. Master August called up hololithic displays to illuminate his succinct recap of the situation. Horus regarded each one in turn, twice asking August to go back so he could study details again. "So, you poured everything you had into this death trap," Torgadon began bluntly, once August had finished. August recoiled as if slapped. Sir, I did as... The War Master raised his hand.
Tarek, too stern. Master August was simply doing as Captain Frome told him.
My apologies, Lord, Torgadon said. I withdraw the comment. I don't believe Tarek should have to, Abaddon cut in. This was a monumental misuse of manpower.
He drip-fed his expedition's forces into a danger zone until they were all gone, said Horus. It happens sometimes. We're here to rectify the problem.
What of the Emperor's children? Loken put in. Did they not even consider waiting?
For what, exactly? Asked Escherus.
For us, smiled Aximand.
An entire expedition was in jeopardy, replied Escherus, his eyes narrowing. We were first on scene, a critical response. We owed it to our Blood Angel brothers to...
To what? Die too? Torgadon asked.
Three companies of Blood Angels were... Escherus exclaimed.
Probably dead already,
Aximand interrupted.
They'd showed you the trappers there. Did you just think you'd walk into it too? Or was Lord Eidolon simply hungry for glory? Asked Torgadon.
Escherus rose to his feet. He glared across the table at Torgadon. Captain, you offend the honour of the Emperor's children.
That may indeed be what I'm doing, yes, Torgadon replied.
Then, sir, you are a base and low-born...
Equerry Escherus, Loken said. None of us like Torgadon much, except when he is speaking the truth. Right now, I like him a great deal. That's enough, Garviel, Horus said quietly. Enough, all of you. Sit down, Equerry. My lunar wolves speak harshly because they are dismayed at this situation. An imperial defeat, companies lost, an implacable foe. This saddens me, and it will sadden the Emperor, too, when he hears of it.
Horus rose.
My report to him will say this. Captain Frome was right to assault this world, for it is clearly a nest of Xenos filth. We applaud his courage. Master August was right to support the captain, even though it meant he spent the bulk of his military formation. Lord Commander Eidolon was right to engage without support, for to do otherwise would have been cowardly when lives were at stake. I would also like to thank all those commanders who rerouted here to offer assistance. From this point on, we will handle it.
How will you handle it, Lord? Escherus asked boldly.
We will consider our options and inform you presently. That's all.
The officers filed out of the Strategium, along with Sedere, Ma, Moy, Goshen, Targost, and Cruz, leaving the War Master alone with the Morneville. Once they were alone, Horus looked at the four of them.
Thank you, friends. Well played.
Loken was fast learning both how the War Master liked to employ the Morneville as a political weapon and what a masterful political animal the War Master was. Aximand had quietly briefed Loken on what would be required of him just before they boarded the shuttle on the Vengeful Spirit. The situation here is a mess, and the commander believes that mess has in part been caused by incompetence at command level. He wants all the officers reprimanded so hard they smart with shame. But if he's going to pull the 140th expedition back together again, he needs their respect and their unswerving loyalty, none of which he will have if he marches in and starts throwing his weight around.
So, the Morneville does the rebuking for him.
Just so, Aximan had smiled. The Lunar Wolves are feared anyway, so let them hate us. They'll get the message, but at the same time, the War Master will be seen as a benign conciliator.
We're his war dogs?
So he doesn't have to growl himself.
Exactly. He wants us to give them a dressing down they'll remember and learn from. That allows him to seem the peacemaker. By the end, if we do things properly, they'll all feel suitably admonished, and simultaneously they'll all love the War Master. Everyone thinks the War Master's keenest talent is as a warrior. No one expects him to be a consummate politician.
Well played indeed, Horus said to the Morneville with a smile. Garviel, that last comment was deliciously barbed. Escherus was quite incandescent.
Loken nodded. From the moment I laid eyes on him, he struck me as a man eager to cover his arse. He knew mistakes had been made.
Yes, he did, Horus said. Just don't expect to find many friends amongst the Emperor's children for a while. They are a proud bunch.
Loken shrugged. I have all the friends I need, sir, he said.
It was about half an hour later when August summoned them to the bridge. A sudden and unexpected hole had appeared in the shield storms of 140-20, and quite close to the supposed landing vectors of the Emperor's children.
At last, said August, a gap in that storm. Would that I had Astartes to drop into it, Aeschylus muttered to himself. But you don't, do you?
Axemund remarked. Aeschylus glowered at little Horus. Let's go in, Torgadon urged the warmaster. Another hole might be a long time coming.
The storm might close in again,
Horus said, pointing to the radiating cyclonics on the Lith. You want this world, don't you? Said Torgadon. Let me take the spear tip down. The lots had already been drawn. The spear tip was to be Torgadon's company, along with the companies of Sedere, Moy, and Targost.
Orbital bombardment, Horus said,
repeating what had already been decided as the best course of action. Men might yet live, Torgadon said. The Warmaster stepped aside and spoke quietly to the Morneville.
If I authorize this, I echo August and Eidolon, and I've just had you take them to task for that very brand of rash mistake.
This is different, Torgadon replied. They went in blind, wave after wave. I'd not advocate duplicating that stupidity, but that break in the weather, it's the first they've detected in months. If there are brothers still alive down there, little Horus said, they deserve one last chance to be found.
I'll go in, said Torgadon. See what I can find. Any sign that the weather is changing, I'll pull the spear tip straight back out, and we can open up the fleet batteries.
I still wonder about the music, the Warmaster said. Anything on that?
The translators are still working, Abaddon replied. Horus looked at Torgadon.
I admire your compassion, Taric, but the answer is a firm no. I'm not going to repeat the errors that have already been made and pour men into...
Lord!
August had come over to them again and held out a data slate. Horus took it and read.
Is this confirmed?
Yes, Warmaster.
Horus regarded the Morneville.
The Master of Vox has detected trace Vox traffic on the surface, in the area of the stormbreak. It does not respond or recognize our signals, but it is active. Imperial. It looks like squad-to-squad transmissions.
There are men still alive, said Abaddon. He seemed genuinely relieved.
Great Emperor, there are men still alive down there.
Torgadon stared at the Warmaster steadily and said nothing. He'd already said it.
Very well, said Horus to Torgadon. Go.
I can't say. The phrase had haunted Loken since the sixth week of the voyage to Murder, since he had gone with little Horus to the lodge meeting. The meeting place had been one of the aft holds of the flagship, a lonely, forgotten pocket of the ship's superstructure. Down in the dark, the way had been lit by tapers. Loken had come in simple robes, as Axemund had instructed him. They'd met on the fourth midship's deck and taken the rail carriage back to the aft quarters before descending via dark service stairwells.
Relax, Axemund kept telling him.
Loken couldn't. He'd never liked the idea of the lodges, and the discovery that Jubal had been a member had increased his disquiet.
This isn't what you think it is, Axemund had said.
And what did he think it was? A forbidden conclave, a cult of the Lectio Divinitatis, or worse, a terrible assembly, a cancer at the heart of the Legion. As he walked down the dim metal deckways, part of him hoped that what awaited him would be infernal, a coven, proof that Jubal had already been tainted by some manufacture of the warp before the Whisperheads, proof that would reveal a source of evil to Loken that he could finally strike back at in open retribution. But the greater part of him willed it to be otherwise. Little Horus Axemund was party to this meeting. If it was tainted, then Axemund's presence meant that taint ran profoundly deep. Loken didn't want to have to go head to head with Axemund. If what he feared was true, then in the next few minutes he might have to fight and kill his Morneville brother.
Who approaches? Asked a voice from the darkness.
Loken saw a figure, evidently an Astartes by his build, shrouded in a hooded cloak.
Two souls,
Axemund replied. What are your names? The figure asked. I can't say.
Pass, friends. They entered the aft hold. Loken hesitated. The vast, scaffold-framed area was eerily lit by candles and a vigorous fire in a metal canister. Dozens of hooded figures stood around. The dancing light made weird shadows of the deep-hold structural architecture. A new friend comes, Axemond announced. The hooded figures turned. Let him show the sign, said one of them in a voice that seemed familiar.
Show it, Axemond whispered to Loken.
Loken slowly held out the medal Axemond had given him. It glinted in the firelight. Inside his robe, his other hand clasped the grip of the combat knife he had concealed.
Let him be revealed, a voice said.
Axemond reached over and drew Loken's hood down.
Welcome, brother warrior, the other said as one.
Axemond pulled down his own hood.
I speak for him, he said.
Your voice is noted. Is he come of his own free will?
He has come because I invited him.
No more secrecy, the voice said. The figures removed their hoods and showed their faces in the glow of the candles. Loken blinked. There was Torgadon, Luke Sederay, Nero Vipus, Callus Ecadon, Verulam Moy, and 24 other senior and junior Astartes, and Sergar Targost, the hidden voice, evidently the Lodge Master.
You'll not need the blade, Targost said gently, stepping forwards and holding out his hand for it. You are free to leave at any time, unmolested. May I take it from you? Weapons are not permitted within the bounds of our meetings.
Loken took out the combat knife and passed it to Targost. The Lodge Master placed it on a wall strut out of the way. Loken continued to look from one face to another. This wasn't like anything he had expected.
Tarik. We'll answer any question, Garviel, Torgadon said. That's why we brought you here.
We'd like you to join us, said Axemond. But if you choose not to, we will respect that too. All we ask, either way, is that you say nothing about what and who you see here to anyone outside.
Loken hesitated.
Or?
It's not a threat, said Axemond. Nor even a condition, simply a request that you respect our privacy.
We've known for a long time, Targos said, that you have no interest in the Warrior Lodge.
I'd perhaps have put it more strongly than that, said Loken.
Targos shrugged. We understand the nature of your opposition. You're far from being the only Astartes to feel that way. That is why we've never made any attempt to induct you.
What's changed? Asked Loken.
You have, said Axemond. You're not just a company officer now, but a Mournival Lord, and the fact of the Lodge has come to your attention.
Jubal's medal, said Loken.
Jubal's medal, nodded Axemond. Jubal's death was a terrible thing, which we all mourn, but it affected you more than anyone. We see how you strive to make amends, to whip your company into tighter and finer form as you blame yourself. When the medal turned up, we were concerned that you might start to make waves, that you might start asking open questions about the Lodge.
So, this is self-interest, Loken asked.
You thought you'd gang up on me and force me into silence.
Garviel, said Luke Sederay. The last thing the Lunar Wolves need is an honest and respected captain, a member of the Mournival, no less, campaigning to expose the Lodge. It would damage the entire Legion.
Really?
Of course, said Sederay. The agitations of a man like you would force the War Master to act.
And he doesn't want to do that, Torgadon said.
He knows?
Loken asked.
You seem shocked, said Axemond. Wouldn't you be more shocked to learn the War Master didn't know about the quiet order within his legion? He knows, and he turns a blind eye, provided we remain closed and confidential in our activities.
I don't understand, Loken said.
That's why you're here, said Moy. You speak out against us because you don't understand. If you wish to oppose what we do, then at least do so from an informed position.
I've had enough, said Loken, turning away. I'll leave now, don't worry. I'll say nothing. I'll make no waves. But I'm disappointed in you all. Someone can return my blade to me tomorrow.
Please, Axemond began.
No, Horus. You meet in secret, and secrecy is the enemy of truth. Truth is everything we have. You hide yourselves. You conceal your identities. For what? Because you are ashamed? The Emperor himself has ruled on this. He does not sanction this kind of activity.
Because he doesn't understand, Torgadon exclaimed. Loken turned back and strode across the chamber until he was nose to nose with Torgadon.
"I can hardly believe I heard you say that," he snarled.
"It's true," said Torgadon, not backing down. "The Emperor isn't a god, but he's so far removed from the rest of mankind, he might as well be. Who does he call brother? No one. Even the blessed Primarchs are only sons to him. The Emperor is wise beyond all measure, and we love him and would follow him until the crack of doom. But he doesn't understand brotherhood, and that is all we meet for."
There was silence for a moment. Loken turned away from Torgadon, unwilling to look upon his face. The others stood in a ring around them.
"We are warriors," said Targost. "This is all we know and all we do. Duty and war, war and duty. Thus it has been since we were created. The only bond we have that is not prescribed by duty is that of brotherhood."
"That is the purpose of the lodge," said Sedere, "to be a place where we are free to meet and converse and confide. Outside the strictures of rank and martial order, there is only one qualification. A man needs to be a part of our quiet order. He must be a warrior."
"In this company," said Targost, "a man of any rank can meet and speak openly of his troubles, his doubts, his ideas, his dreams, without fear of scorn or monition from a commanding officer. This is a sanctuary for our spirit as men."
"Look around," Aximund invited, stepping forwards, gesturing with his hands. "Look at these faces. Company captains, sergeants, file warriors. Where else could such a mix of men meet as equals? We leave our ranks at the door when we come in. Here, knowledge and experience is passed on. Ideas are circulated, commonalities discovered. Segar holds the office of lodge master only so that a function of order may be maintained. By connecting warriors, otherwise divorced by rank or station, it makes bonds between men who would otherwise not even know one another's name. We thrive, like all legions, from our firm hierarchy of formal authority, the loyalty that flows down from a commander through to his lowest soldier. Loyal to a squad, to a section, to a company, the lodge reinforces complementary links across that structure, from squad to squad, company to company. It could be said to be our secret weapon. It is the true strength of the Lunar Wolves, strapping us together, side to side, where we are already bound up top to toe.
You have a dozen spears to carry into war, said Torgadon quietly. You gather them as a bundle, so they are easier to bear. How much easier is that bundle to carry if it is tied together around the shafts?
If that was a metaphor, Loken said, it was lousy.
I know, but will he stay? Asked Torgadon.
For now, perhaps, said Loken.
The meeting lasted for 2 hours. There were no crude rituals or demonic practices to observe. The men, the brothers, sat around and talked in small groups, then listened as Aximund recounted the details of a Xenos war that he had participated in, which he hoped might give them insight into the fight ahead. Afterwards, Torgadon told some jokes, most of them bad. As Torgadon rambled on with a particularly involved and vulgar tale, Aximund came over to Loken.
"Where do you suppose," he began quietly, "the notion of the Mournival came from?"
"From this?" Loken asked.
Aximund nodded. "The Mournival has no legitimate standing or powers. It's simply an informal organ, but the Warmaster would not be without it. It was created originally as a visible extension of the Invisible Lodge, though that link has long since gone. They're both informal bodies, interlaced into the very formal structures of our lives."
"I imagine so many horrors about this lodge," said Loken.
"I know. All part of that straight-up-and-down thing you do so well, Garvey. It's why we love you, and the lodge would like to embrace you."
"Will there be formal vows, or the theatrical rigmarole of the Mournival?"
Aximund laughed. "No, if you're in, you're in. There are only very simple rules. You don't talk about what passes between us here to any not of the lodge. This is downtime, free time. The men, especially the junior ranks, need to be confident they can speak freely without any comeback. You should hear what some of them say."
"I think I might like to."
"That's good. You'll be given a medal to carry, just as a token, and if anyone asks you about any lodge confidence, the answer is, I can't say. There's nothing else, really."
"I've misjudged this thing," Loken said.
"I understand, particularly given the matter of poor Jubal, and given your own staunch character.
Am I to replace Jubal?
It's not a matter of replacement, little Horace said. And anyway, no. Jubal was a member, though he hadn't attended any meetings in years. That's why we forgot to palm away his medal before your inspection. There's your danger sign. Not that Jubal was a member, but that he was a member and had seldom attended. We didn't know what was going on in his head. If he'd come to us and shared, we might have preempted the horror you endured at the Whisperheads.
But you told me I was to replace someone, Loken said.
Yes, Udon. We miss him.
Udon was a lodge member.
Axemond nodded. A long-time brother, and, by the way, go easy on Vipus.
Loken went over to where Nero Vipus was sitting, beside the canister fire. He looked uncomfortable, toying with the heel seam of his new hand.
Nero. Garviel. I was bracing myself for this. Why?
Because you didn't want anyone in your command to...
As I understand it, Loken said, the lodge is a place for free speech and openness, not discomfort.
Nero smiled and nodded. I was a member of the lodge long before I came into your command. I respected your wishes, but I couldn't leave the Brotherhood. Sometimes I thought about asking you to join, but I knew you'd hate me for it.
You're the best friend I have, Loken said. I couldn't hate you for anything.
At Jubal's medal, when you found it, you wouldn't let the matter go.
And all you said was, I can't say. Spoken like a true lodge member.
Nero sniggered.
By the way, Loken said, it was you, wasn't it?
What?
Who took Jubal's medal?
I told Captain Axemond about your interest, just so he knew. But no, Garvey, I didn't take the medal.
When the meeting closed, Loken walked away along one of the vast service tunnels that ran the length of the ship's bilges. Water dripped from the rusted roof, and oil rainbows shone on the dirty lakes across the deck. Togadon ran to catch up with him.
Well, he asked.
I was surprised to see you there, said Loken.
I was surprised to see you there, Togadon replied. A star chars like you. They walked on for a while. Togadon whistled the Legion March loudly and tunelessly.
Nothing to say, he asked at length.
About what?
Well, about that.
I was misinformed. I understand better now.
And?
Loken stopped and looked at Togadon.
I have only one worry, he said. The lodge meets in secret, so, logically, it is good at keeping itself secret. I have a problem with secrets.
Which is?
If you get good at keeping them, who knows what kind you'll end up keeping?
Togadon maintained a straight face for as long as possible, and then exploded in laughter.
No good, he spluttered. I can't help it. You're so straight up and down.
Loken smiled, but his voice was serious.
So you keep telling me. But I mean it, Taric. The lodge hides itself so well, it's become used to hiding things. Imagine what it could hide if it wanted to.
The fact that you're a starch ass, Togadon asked.
I think that's common knowledge.
It is. It so is, Togadon chuckled. He paused. So, will you attend again?
I can't say, Loken replied.
Four full companies of the Lunar Wolves had dropped into the clearing, and the Megarachnid forces had perished beneath their rapacious onslaught, those that had not fled back into the shivering forests. A block of smoke, as black and vast as a mountainside, hung over the battlefield in the cold night air. Xenos bodies covered the ground, curled and shriveled like metal shavings. Captain Togadon, the Lunar Wolf said, introducing himself formally and making the sign of the Aquila.
Captain Tarvitz, Tarvitz responded. My thanks and respect for your intervention.
The honour's mine, Tarvitz, Togadon said. He glanced around the smouldering field. Did you really assault here with only six men?
It was the only workable option in the circumstances, Tarvitz replied.
Nearby, Bull was freeing Lucius from the wad of Megarachnid cement. Are you alive? Togadon asked, looking over.
Lucius nodded sullenly and set himself apart while he picked the scabs of cement off his perfect armour.
Togadon regarded him for a moment, then turned his attention to the Vox intel.
How many with you? Tarvitz asked.
A spear tip, said Togadon.
Four companies.
A moment, please.
Second company, form up on me.
Luke, secure the perimeter.
Bring up the heavies.
Sergar, cover the left flank. Verulam, front up the right wing.
The Vox crackled back. "Who's the commander here?" a voice demanded. "I am," said Torgadon, swinging round. Flanked by a dozen of the Emperor's children, the tall, proud figure of Lord Eidolon crunched towards them across the fuming white slag. "I am Eidolon," he said, facing Torgadon. "Torgadon." "Under the circumstances," Eidolon said, "I'll understand if you don't bow." "I can't for the life of me imagine any circumstances in which I would," Torgadon replied. Eidolon's bodyguards wrenched out their combat blades. "What did you say?" demanded one. "I said you boys should put those pig sticks away before I hurt somebody with them." Eidolon raised his hand, and the men sheathed their swords. "I appreciate your intervention, Torgadon, for the situation was grave. Also, I understand that the Lunar Wolves are not bred like proper men, with proper manners. So, I'll overlook your comment." "That's Captain Torgadon," Torgadon replied. "If I insulted you in any way, let me assure you I meant to." "Face to face with me," Eidolon growled, and tore off his helm, forcing his gen-hans biology to cope with the atmosphere and the radioactive wind. Torgadon did the same. They stared into each other's eyes. Tarvitz watched the confrontation in mounting disbelief. He'd never seen anyone stand up to Lord Eidolon. The pair were chest-plate to chest-plate, Eidolon slightly taller. Torgadon seemed to be smirking. "How would you like this to go, Eidolon?" Torgadon inquired. "Would you perhaps like to go home with your head stuck up your ass?" "You are a base-born cur," Eidolon hissed. "Just so you know," replied Torgadon, "you'll have to do an awful lot better than that. I'm a base-born cur and proud of it. The point is, though, I am the designated commander of the Lunar Wolf Spear Tip, come to rescue your sorry backsides. I do this by warrant of the War Master himself. He's up there, orbiting this rock, and right now he thinks you're a cretin." Eidolon hesitated. "I, of course, recognize the majesty of the War Master." "Do you, Eidolon? Well, that's good, because I'm it. I'm his chosen instrument here. You'll address me as if I were the War Master. You'll show me some respect, too. War Master Horus believes you've made some shit, awful mistakes in your prosecution of this theatre. How many brothers did you drop here? A company? How many left? Sagar? Headcount?"
39 live ones, Tarek," the Vox answered.
39? You were so hungry for glory, you wasted more than half a company. If I was Primarch Fulgrim, I'd have your head on a pole. The War Master may yet decide to do just that. So, Lord Eidolon, are we clear?"
"We," Eidolon replied slowly, "are clear, Captain."
"Perhaps you'd like to go and undertake a review of your forces," Torgadon suggested. "The enemy will be back soon, I'm sure, and in great numbers."
Eidolon gazed venomously at Torgadon for a few seconds, and then replaced his helm.
"I will not forget this insult, Captain," he said.
"Then it was worth the trip," Torgadon replied, clamping on his own helmet. It took a little under an hour to assemble their forces in the clearing. Torgadon established contact with the fleet via the astro-telepath he had brought with him. The shield storms raged with dreadful fury over the surrounding stalk forests, but the sky directly above the clearing remained calm. As he marshalled the remains of his force, Tarvitz observed Torgadon and his fellow captains conducting a further angry debate with Eidolon and Antaeus. There were apparently some differences of opinion as to what their course of action should be. After a while, Torgadon walked away from the argument. Tarvitz guessed he was recusing himself from the quarrel before he said something else to infuriate Eidolon. Torgadon walked the line of the picket, stopping to talk to some of his men, and finally arrived at Tarvitz's position.
"You seem like a decent sort, Tarvitz," he remarked. "How do you stand that lord of yours?"
"It is my duty to stand him," Tarvitz replied. "He is my lord commander. His combat record is glorious."
"I doubt he'll be adding this endeavour to his triumph roll," Torgadon said. "Did you agree with his decision to drop here?"
"I neither agreed nor disagreed," Tarvitz replied. "I simply obeyed."
"I know that," Torgadon sighed. "Just between you and me, brother to brother, did you like the decision?" I really...
Oh, come on. I just saved your life. Answer me candidly and we'll call it quits.
Tarvitz hesitated. I thought it a little reckless, he admitted. I thought it was prompted by ambitious notions that had little to do with the safety of our company or the salvation of the missing forces.
Thank you for speaking honestly.
May I speak honestly a little more? Tarvitz asked.
Of course.
I admire you, sir, Tarvitz said. But please remember that we are the Emperor's children and we are very proud. We do not like to be shown up or belittled, nor do we like others diminishing us.
When you say we, you mean Eidolon?
No, I mean we.
Very diplomatic, said Torgadon. In the early days of the Crusade, the Emperor's children fought alongside us for a time, before you had grown enough in numbers to operate autonomously.
I know, sir. I was there.
Then you'll know the esteem with which the Lunar Wolves regarded your legion. I was a junior officer back then, but I remember distinctly what Horus said, that the Emperor's children were the living embodiment of the Adeptus Astartes. Horus enjoys a special bond with your Primarch. The Lunar Wolves have cooperated militarily with just about every other legion during this great war. We still regard yours as the best we've ever had the honour of serving with.
It pleases me to hear you say so, sir, Tarvitz replied.
Then, how have you changed so? Torgadon asked. Is Eidolon typical of the command echelon that rules you now? His arrogance astounds me. So damn superior.
Our ethos is not about superiority, Captain, Tarvitz answered. It is about purity. But one is often mistaken for the other. We model ourselves on the Emperor, and in seeking to be like him, we can seem aloof and haughty.
Did you ever think, asked Torgadon, that while it's laudable to emulate the Emperor as much as possible, the one thing that you cannot and should not aspire to is his supremacy? He is the Emperor. Strive to be like him in all ways, by all means, but do not presume to be on his level. No one is alike to him.
My legion understands that, Tarvitz said. Sometimes, though, it doesn't translate well to others.
There's no purity in pride, Torgadon said. Nothing pure or admirable in arrogance or overconfidence.
My Lord Eidolon knows this.
He should show he knows it. He led you into a disaster, and he won't even apologize for it.
I'm sure in due course my Lord will formally acknowledge your efforts in relieving us, and...
I don't want any credit, Torgadon said. You were brothers in trouble, and we came to help, but I had to face down the War Master to get permission to drop, because he believed it was insanity to send any more men to their deaths in an unknowable place against an unknowable foe. That's what Eidolon did. In the name, I imagine, of honour and pride.
How did you convince the War Master? Tarvitz wondered.
I didn't, said Torgadon. You did. The storm had gone out over this area, and we detected your vox scatter. You proved you were still alive down here, and the War Master immediately sanctioned the spear tip to come and pull you out.
Torgadon looked up at the misty stars.
The storms are their best weapon, he mused. If we're going to wrestle this world to compliance, we'll have to find a way to beat them.
Eidolon suggested the trees might be key, that they might act as generators or amplifiers for the storm.
He said that once he destroyed the trees, the storm in this locality collapsed.
Tarvitz paused. My Lord Eidolon said that.
Only piece of sense I've heard out of him. He said that as soon as he set charges to the trees and demolished them, the storm went out. That's an interesting theory. The War Master wants me to use the storm break to pull everyone here out, but Eidolon is dead set on finding more trees and levelling them, in the hope that we can break a hole in the enemy's cover. What do you think?
I think my Lord Eidolon is wise, said Tarvitz.
Bull had been stationed nearby and had overheard the exchange. He could not contain himself any longer.
Permission to speak, Captain, he said.
Let's hear you, brother.
My Lord Eidolon did not destroy the tree, sir. Captain Tarvitz did. He insisted. My Lord Eidolon then chastised him for the act, claiming it was a waste of charges, Bull said.
Is this true?
Torgadon asked.
Yes, said Tarvitz.
Why did you do it?
Because it didn't seem right for the bodies of our dead to hang in such ignominy, Tarvitz said.
And you'd let Eidolon take the credit and not say anything?
He is my lord.
Thank you, brother, Torgadon said to Bull.
Torgadon turned to Tarvitz.
It's a funny thing. It shouldn't matter, but it does. Now I know you felled the trees, I feel better about pursuing that line of action. Eidolon clearly knows a good idea when someone else has it. Let's go cut down a few more trees, Tarvitz. You can show me how it's done.
Loken remained on the Strategium for the first 3 hours after the drop, long enough to celebrate Torgadon's signal from the surface. The spear tip had secured the drop site and formed up with the residue of Lord Eidolon's company. After that, the atmosphere had become strangely more tense. They were waiting to hear Torgadon's field decision. Abaddon, cautious and closed, had already ordered Stormbirds prep for extraction flights. Axemen paced silently. The Warmaster had withdrawn into his sanctum with Malagurst. Locum leant at the Strategium rail for a while, overlooking the bustle of the vast bridge below, and discussed tactics with Tybalt Mar. Mar and Moy were both sons of Horus, cast in his image so firmly that they looked like identical twins. At some point in the Legion's history, they had earned the nicknames the Either and the Or, referring to the fact that they were almost interchangeable. It was often hard to distinguish between them. They were so alike. One might do as well as the other. Both were competent field officers, with a rack of victories each that would make any captain proud, though neither had attained the glories of Sedere or Abaddon. They were precise, efficient, and workmanlike in their leadership. But they were lunar wolves, and what was workmanlike to that frattery was exemplary to any other regiment. As Mar spoke, it became clear to Loken that he was envious of his twin selection to the undertaking. It was Horus's habit to send both or neither. They worked well together, complementing one another, as if somehow anticipating one another's decisions. But the ballot for the spear tip had been democratic and fair. Moy had won a place. Mar had not. Mar rattled on to Loken, evidently sublimating his worries about his brother's fate. After a while, Cruz came over to join them at the rail. Yacton Cruz was an anachronism, ancient and rather tiresome. He had been a captain in the Legion since its inception, his prominence entirely eclipsed once Horus had been repatriated and given command by the Emperor. He was the product of another era, a throwback to the years of the Unification Wars and the bad old times, stubborn and slightly cantankerous, a vestigial trace of the way the Legion had gone about things in antiquity.
"We will be out of this in a day," he announced categorically to Loken and Mar. "You mark my words, young man, a day, and the Commander will order extraction." He spoke softly, and believed it was his quiet tone that had, over the years, earned him the nickname the Half-Herd.
Loken knew this wasn't so. He was known as the Half-Herd because his pronouncements were not best listened to too closely.
"Tarik is doing well," Loken began. "The boy Torgadon has been lucky. But he cannot press this to a conclusion. You mark my words, in and out in a day."
"I wish I was down there," Mar said.
"Foolish thoughts," Cruz decided. "It's only a rescue run. I cannot for the life of me imagine what the Emperor's children thought they were doing, going into this hell. I served with them, in the early days, you know. Put us to shame on the Eastern Fringe, so they did. But that was back then."
"It certainly was," said Loken.
"It most certainly was," agreed Cruz, missing the irony entirely. "I can't imagine what they thought they were doing here."
"Prosecuting a war?" Loken suggested.
Cruz looked at him diffidently. "Are you mocking me, Garviel?"
"Never, sir. I would never do that." "I hope we're deployed," Mar grumbled, "and soon."
"We won't be,"
Cruz declared. He rubbed the patchy grey goatee that decorated his long, lined face. He was most certainly not a son of Horus. "I have business to attend to," Loken said, excusing himself. "I'll take my leave, brothers." Mar glared at Loken, annoyed to be left alone with Cruz. Loken winked and wandered off, hearing Cruz embark on one of his long and tortuous stories to Mar. In the solitude of his arming chamber, Loken sat for a while, running through certain mental exercises designed to promote clarity and concentration. When he grew bored of them, he took up the book Cinderman had loaned him. He'd read a good deal less of the Chronicles of Ursh during the voyage than he'd intended. The commander had kept him busy. He folded the heavy, yellowed pages open with ungloved hands and found his place. The Chronicles were as raw and brutal as Cinderman had promised. Long-forgotten cities were routinely sacked or burned or simply evaporated in nuclear storms.
Seas were regularly stained with blood, skies with ash, and landscapes were often carpeted with the bleached and numberless bones of the conquered. Page after page celebrated the cruel practices and equally cruel character of the despot Caliban. It amused Loken for the most part. Fanciful logic abounded, as did an air of strained realism. Feats of arms were described that no pre-Unity warriors could have accomplished. These, after all, were the feral hosts of techno-barbarians that the proto-Astartes, in their crude thunder armour, had been created to bring to heel. Caliban's great generals, Lertois and Shenkal, and later Qualadon, were described in language more appropriate to Primarchs. They carved for Caliban an impossibly vast domain during the latter part of the Age of Strife. Loken had skipped ahead once or twice and saw that later parts of the work recounted the fall of Caliban and described the apocalyptic conquest of Ursh by the forces of Unity. He saw passages referring to enemy warriors bearing the thunderbolt and lightning emblem, which had been the personal device of the Emperor before the Eagle of the Imperium was formalized. Loken wondered if the Emperor himself would be mentioned, and in what terms, and wanted to look to see if he could recognize the names of any of the proto-Astartes warriors. But he felt he owed it to Kirill Sinderman to read the thing thoroughly and return to his original place and order. He quickly became absorbed by a sequence detailing Shankal's campaigns against the Nordafric conclaves. Shankal had assembled a significant horde of irregular levies from the southern client states of Ursh and used them to support his main armed strengths, including the infamous Tupolev lancers and the Red Engines during the invasion. 8 epic battles marked Shankal's advance into the Nordafric zones, the greatest of them being Zosa. Over a period of 9 days and nights, the war machines of the Red Engines blasted their way across the cultivated agroponic pastures and reduced them back to the desert from which they had originally been irrigated and nurtured. They cut through the laser-thorn hedges and the jeweled walls of the outer conclave and unleashed dirty atomics into the heart of the ruling zone, before the lancers led a tidal wave of screaming berserkers through the breach into the earthly paradise of the gardens of Zosa. The last fragment of Eden on a corrupted planet, which they, of course, trampled underfoot. Loken felt himself skipping ahead again as the account bogged down in interminable lists of battle glories and honour rolls. Then his eyes alighted on a strange phrase, and he read back. At the heart of the ruling zone, a 9th minor battle had marked the conquest, almost as an afterthought. One bastion had remained, the Merengen, or Walled Sanctuary, where their last hierophants of the conclaves held out, practicing, so the text said, their sciomancy by the flame-light of their burning realm. Shankal, wishing swift resolution to the conquest, had sent Anult Kaiser to crush the sanctuary. Kaiser was Lord Marshal of the Tupolev Lancers, and during the advance on the Merengen, Kaiser's dream interpreters had warned of the hierophants' sciomancy and their phantasmagorian ways. When the battle began, magics were unleashed. Plagues of insects, as thick as monsoon rain, and so vast in their swirling masses that they blacked out the sun, fell upon Kaiser's forces. Water boiled without fire. Men turned to stone, or their bones turned to paste, or their flesh succumbed to boils and buboes and flaked off their limbs. Others went mad. Some became demons and turned upon their own. Loken stopped reading and went back over the sentence again. Some became demons and turned upon their own. Sinderman, had he given Loken this work deliberately? To what end? Some veiled message? He resolved to study it, section by section, and take his questions to his mentor. Loken's reverie was rudely halted by the blaring of sirens. Setting the book aside, he strode out of his arming chamber and headed in the direction of the strategium. Men and women peered out of doorways to look at him as he passed by. He raised his cuff to his mouth. "Nero, report. Is it Taric? Has something happened?" The vox crackled, and Vipus's voice issued tinnily from the cuff speaker. "Something has happened, all right, Garvey. Get back here." "What? What's happened?" "A ship, that's what. A barge has just translated in system behind us. Sanguinius himself has come." His long black hair was pressed down by the weight of the shawl of gold chain he wore across his head. The edges of it framed his solemn features. He had marked his cheeks with grey ash in mourning.
"Show me, Taric," said Sanguinius.
Togadon nodded. The wind moaned around the still figures assembled on the lonely hillside, and rain pattered off their armour plate. Togadon gestured, and Tarvitz, Bull, and Lucius stepped forwards, holding out the dirty relics.
"These men, my lord," Togadon said, his voice unusually shaky, "these children of the Emperor recovered these remains selflessly, and it is fit they offer them to you themselves."
"You did this honour?"
Sanguinius asked Tarvitz.
"I did, my lord."
Sanguinius took the battered Astartes helm from Tarvitz's hands and studied it. He towered over the captain, his golden plate badged with rubies and bright jewels. Sanguinius's vast wings, like the pinions of a giant eagle, were furled against his back and hung with silver bands and loops of pearls. Sanguinius turned the helm over in his hands and regarded the armourer's mark inside the rim.
8 Night Leopard, he said.
At his side, Chapter Master Raldoran began to inspect the manifest.
"Don't trouble yourself, Ral," Sanguinius told him. "I know the mark. Captain Thoros. He will be missed."
Sanguinius handed the helm to Raldoran and nodded to Tarvitz.
"Thank you for this kindness, Captain," he said.
He looked across to Eidolon.
"And to you, sir, my gratitude that you came to Frome's help so urgently."
Eidolon bowed, and seemed to ignore the dark glare the War Master was casting in his direction. Sanguinius turned to Torgadon.
"And to you, Taric, most of all, for breaking this nightmare open."
"I do only what my War Master instructs me," Togadon replied.
Sanguinius looked over at Horus.
"Is that right?"
"Taric had some latitude," Horus smiled.
He stepped forwards and embraced Sanguinius to his breast. No two Primarchs were as close as the War Master and the Angel. They had barely been out of each other's company since Sanguinius's arrival. The majestic Lord of the Blood Angels, the 9th Legion Astartes, stepped back and looked out across the forlorn landscape. Around the base of the ragged hill, hundreds of armoured figures waited in silence. The vast majority wore either the hard white of the Lunar Wolves or the arterial red of the Angels, save for the remnants of the detachment of Emperor's Children, a small knot of purple and gold. Behind the Astartes, the war machines waited in the rain, silent and black. Beyond them, the hosts of the Imperial Army stood in observance, banners flapping sluggishly in the cold breeze. Togadon's spear tip had raised a large sector of the landscape, demolishing stone trees wherever they could be found, and thus taming the formidable weather in this part of Murder. The sky had faded to a mottled powder grey, and rain fell softly and persistently, reducing visibility in the distances to a foggy blur. At the War Master's command, the main force of the assembled Imperial ships had made planetfall in the comparative safety of the storm-free zone.
"In the old philosophies," Sanguinius said, "vengeance was seen as a weak motive and a flaw of the spirit. It is hard for me to feel so noble today. I would cleanse this rock in the memory of my lost brothers and their kin who died trying to save them."
The angel looked at his Primarch brother.
"But that is not necessary. Vengeance is not necessary. There is an implacable alien menace here that rejects any civilized intercourse with mankind, and has greeted us with murder and murder alone. That suffices. As the Emperor has taught us, what is anathema to mankind must be dealt with directly to ensure the continued survival of the Imperium. Will you stand with me?"
"We will murder together," Horus replied.
Thank you.
Once those words were spoken, the Astartes went to war for 6 months. Supported by the army and the devices of the Mechanicum, they assaulted the bleak, shivering latitudes of the world called Murder and laid waste the Megarachnid. It was a glorious war in many ways, and not an easy one. No matter how many of them were slaughtered, the Megarachnid did not cower or turn in retreat. It seemed as if they had no will nor any spirit to be broken. They came on and on, issuing forth from cracks and crevices in the ruddy land day after day. At times it felt as if there was an endless reserve of them, as if unimaginably vast nests of them infested the mantle of the planet, or as if ceaseless subterranean factories manufactured more and yet more of them every day to replace the losses delivered by the Imperial forces. Loken, like many of the Lunar Wolves present, personally rejoiced in the circumstances of the conflict, for it was the first time since his election as War Master that the commander had led them on the field. Early on, in the command habitent, one rainy evening, the Mournival had gently tried to dissuade Horus from field operations. Abaddon had attempted deftly to portray the War Master's role and importance as a thing of a much higher consequence than martial engagement.
"Am I not fit for it?"
Horus had scowled, the rain drumming on the canopy overhead. "I mean, you are too precious for it, Lord," Abaddon had countered. "This is one world, one field of war. The Emperor has charged you."
"Ezekiel," the War Master's tone had betrayed a warning note, "do not presume to instruct me on my duties."
"Lord, I would not," Abaddon exclaimed immediately with a respectful bow. "Precious is the word," Aximand had put in quickly, coming to Abaddon's aid. "If you were to be wounded, to fall even, it would—" Horus rose, glaring.
"Now you deride my abilities as a warrior, little one. Have you grown soft since my ascendance?"
"No, my lord, no." Only Torgadon, it seemed, had noticed the glimmer of amusement behind the War Master's pantomime of anger. "We're only afraid you won't leave any glory for us," he said. Horus began to laugh. Realizing he had been playing with them, the members of the Mournival began to laugh too.
"We'll war this together, my sons," he said. "That is how I was made. If I had suspected back at Ulanor that the rank of War Master would require me to relinquish the glories of the field forever, I would not have accepted it. Someone else could have taken the honor."
Afterwards, Loken wondered if the War Master had not been using his sly political skills yet again. He had avoided the central issues entirely and deflected their concerns with an appeal to their code as warriors. It was his way of telling them that, for all their good counsel, there were some matters on which his mind would not be swayed. Loken was sure that Sanguinius was the reason. Horus could not bring himself to stand by and watch his dearest brother go to war. Horus could not resist the temptation of fighting shoulder to shoulder with Sanguinius, as they had done in the old days. Horus would not let himself be outshone, even by the one he loved most dearly. To see them together on the battlefield was a heart-stopping thing. Two gods of war, raging at the head of a tide of red and white. Dozens of times they accomplished victories in partnership on murder that should, had what followed been any different, become deeds as lauded and immortal as Ulanor or any other great triumph. Many battles had been vast, pitched affairs, where thousands of Astartes led tens of thousands of army troopers against endless files of the Megarachnid. Luke Sedaray had led his company against a formation of Megarachnid 25 deep and 100 across, and splintered it in under half an hour. Eacton Cruz, despite his stubborn, tiresome ways, had broken the back of a surprise Megarachnid assault and proved there was metal in him still. Tybalt Mar, the Either, had taken the low mountains in 2 days and elevated himself at last into the ranks of the exceptional. Saul Tarvitz, fighting at Torgadon's side rather than in the cohort of his arrogant Lord Eidolon, renewed the Lunar Wolves' respect for the Emperor's children through several feats of arms. Tarvitz and Torgadon had achieved a brotherhood during the war and eased the discontent between the two legions. Loken had heard rumours that Eidolon was initially displeased with Tarvitz's deportment, until he recognised how simple brotherhood and effort was redeeming his mistake. Eidolon, though he would never admit it, realized full well he was out of favor with the War Master. But,
as time passed, he found he was at least tolerated within the bounds of the commander's war tent and consulted along with the other officers. Sanguinius had also smoothed the way. He knew his brother Horus was keen to rebuke Fulgrim for the high-handed qualities his Astartes had lately displayed. Horus and Fulgrim were close, almost as close as Sanguinius and the War Master. It dismayed the Lord of Angels to see a potential rift in the making.
"You cannot afford dissent," Sanguinius had said. "As War Master, you must have the undivided respect of the Primarchs, just as the Emperor had. Moreover, you and Fulgrim are too long bound as brothers for you to fall to bickering."
The conversation had taken place during a brief hiatus in the fighting. The two Primarchs had rested for a day in a command camp some leagues behind the advance. Loken remembered it well. He and the others of the Mournival had been present in the main war tent when Sanguinius brought the matter up.
"I don't bicker," Horus said. "The Emperor's children have always been proud, but that pride is becoming insolence. Brother or not, Fulgrim must know his place. I have trouble enough with Angron's bloody rages and Perturabo's damn petulance. I'll not brook disrespect from such a close ally."
"Was it Fulgrim's error or his man Eidolon's?" Sanguinius asked.
"Fulgrim made Eidolon Lord Commander. He favours his merits and evidently trusts him and approves of his manner. If Eidolon embodies the character of the Third Legion, then I have issue with it. Not just here. I need to know I can rely upon the Emperor's children."
"And why do you think you can't?"
"Because they're too damn proud of themselves."
"Are not all Astartes proud of their own cohort?"
Sanguinius took a sip of wine. He looked over at the Mournival.
"Are you not proud, Ezekiel?"
"To the ends of creation, my lord," Abaddon replied.
"If I may say, sir," said Togaden, "there is a difference. There is a man's natural pride and loyalty to his own legion. That may be a boastful pride, and the source of rivalry between Astartes. But the Emperor's children seem particularly haughty, as if above the likes of us. Not all of them, I hasten to add."
Listening, Loken knew Togaden was referring to Tarvitz and the other friends he had made amongst Tarvitz's units.
Sanguinius nodded.
"It is their mindset. It has always been so. They seek perfection to be the best they can, to echo the perfection of the Emperor himself. It is not superiority. Fulgrim has explained this to me himself."
"And Fulgrim may believe so," Horus said. "But superiority is how it manifests amongst some of his men. There was once mutual respect, but now they sneer and condescend. I fear it is my new rank that they resent. I'll not have it."
"They don't resent you," Sanguinius said.
"Maybe, but they resent the role my rank invests upon my legion. The Lunar Wolves have always been seen as rude barbarians. The children regard the Lunar Wolves as peers only by dint of my legion's record in war. The wolves sport no finery or elegant manners. We are cheerfully raw where they are regal."
"Then maybe it is time to consider doing what the Emperor suggested," Sanguinius said.
Horus shook his head emphatically.
"I refuse that on Olinor. Honour though it was, I'll not contemplate it again."
"Things change. You are War Master now. All the legions, Astartes, must recognise the preeminence of the 16th Legion. Perhaps some need to be reminded."
Horus snorted. "I don't see Russ trying to clean up his berserk horde and rebrand them to court respect."
"Leman Russ is not War Master," said Sanguinius. "Your title changed, brother, at the Emperor's command, so that all the rest of us would be in no mistake as to the power you wield and the trust the Emperor placed in you. Perhaps the same thing must happen to your legion."
Later, as they trudged west through the drizzle and skeins of surface water, Loken asked Abaddon what the Lord of Angels had meant.
"At Ulanor," the first captain answered, "the beloved Emperor advised our commander to rename the 16th Legion, so there might be no mistake as to the power of our authority."
"What name did he wish us to take?"
Loken asked. "The sons of Horus," Abaddon replied. The 6th month of the campaign was drawing to a close when the strangers arrived. Over the period of a few days, the vessels of the expedition, high in orbit, became aware of curious signals and etheric displacements that suggested the activity of starships nearby, and various attempts were made to locate the source. Advised of the situation, the War Master presumed that other reinforcements were on the verge of arrival, perhaps even additional units from the Emperor's Children. Patrolling scout ships and cruisers on picket control could find no concrete trace of any vessels, but many reported spectral readings, like the precursor field elevations that announced an imminent translation. The expedition fleet left high anchor and took station on a battle-ready grid. When the strangers finally appeared, they came in rapidly and confidently, gunning in from a translation point at the system edges. 3 massive capital ships of a build pattern and drive signature unknown to Imperial records. As they came closer, they began to broadcast what seemed to be challenge signals. The nature of these signals was remarkably similar to the repeat of the outstation beacons, untranslatable and, according to the War Master, akin to music. The ships were big. Visual relay showed them to be bright, sleek and silver-white, shaped like royal scepters with heavy prows, long, lean hulls and splayed drive sections. The largest of them was twice the keel length of the Vengeful Spirit. General alert was sounded throughout the fleet, shields raised and weapons unshrouded. The War Master made immediate preparations to quit the surface and return to his flagship. Engagements with the Megarachnid were hastily broken off, and the ground forces recalled. Horus ordered the fleet to make hail and hold fire unless fired upon. There seemed a high probability that these vessels belonged to the Megarachnid, come from other worlds in support of the Nests on Murder. The ships did not respond directly to the hails, but continued to broadcast their own curious signals. They prowled in close and halted within firing distance of the expedition formation. Then they spoke, not with one voice, but with a chorus of voices uttering the same words, overlaid with more of the curious musical transmissions. The message was received cleanly, and they spoke in the language of mankind.
"Did you not see the warnings we left?" they said. "What have you done here?"